Early in adulthood, I came to love this song. Pass me not, O gentle Savior, and hear my humble cry. One of us thou art calling, do not pass me by. And I'm crying, Savior, oh Savior, I want you just to hear my humble cry. And I'm asking, Lord, why on earth is thou art calling? Do not pass me by. So I fell in love with the hymn while working in an African-American church in North Memphis. I didn't know I knew the song because it was sung so differently there than it had been sung when I was growing up. I didn't know that I would love the song because it had only been sung one way. Of course, it came from my own brokenness and search for self, too. I was 22 years old or something like it in trying to figure out who I was and who I was to be. It was the third verse that would help to define that period of my life and much of the adulthood that came to follow. The third verse says, "Trusting only in thy merit, would I ever seek thy face. Heal my wounded, broken spirit, and save me by thy grace." The hymn was written by Fanny J. Crosby in 1868. Having been born blind, she became one of the most prolific poets of her time when it comes to hymn writing. There are two stories for inspiration to that song. I don't know which one is true, so I'll tell both. The first that I heard was that she dreamt she was sitting in church, that Jesus came through the aisle, talking to people and taking them to heaven with him. And as he went by, she cried out, "Do not pass me by." This story makes sense with the words to the song, and its references to grace and the acknowledgement that one can't walk alone gives some precedence to that idea. The other story involves a trip to prison. She was speaking and reading her poems and singing her hymns and heard a prisoner cry out in a pleading voice, "Good Lord, do not pass me by." Both stories say something very important about grace. Both involve crying out to something greater than ourselves, and both involve hope and fear. Grace is a binding agent between love and forgiveness, in that if we choose to love, we must also choose grace. If we choose to forgive, it is because of grace. But then we will not be able to choose grace without first choosing to love and choosing to forgive. These things go hand in hand, and there are no covenants without them. There is no community, no church, and no future. The beginning of grace is the self-knowledge that we ourselves are broken. No matter the shine, no matter the success, we are broken. I don't mean in the original sin kind of way, but in the vast and perfect neurosis which is our childhood and our family systems. If we were to open the closet door and let the skeletons fall as they may, the world would see us for who we are. The thing that most often we tried to hide, our humanity. Once we're able to see our own brokenness, we can better empathize with the brokenness of others. When it comes to the brokenness of others, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says it this way in the chapter How It Works. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, though we did not like their symptoms in the way these disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." And he goes on to say, we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And it's important to understand the context of this little blurb, that it falls in the part of the chapter dealing with the fourth and fifth steps in AA. This fearless and searching moral inventory. The admission of that inventory to ourselves, to God, and to another person. Which is the step on which many members of the 12-step programs get stuck. The admission of our own shame. The introduction of this section to steps 4 and 5 bring out a very important word in recovery. Resentment. The big book says this. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. Resentment stands in opposition to grace because it stands in opposition to forgiveness, and forgiveness is kin to grace. You cannot have one without the other. Put simply, resentment is like taking poison and waiting for another person to die. That quote, by the way, is attributed to many different people, from Nelson Mandela to the Buddha. But the fact remains the same. Resentment brings death where grace brings life. Sadly, though, choosing to name our resentment doesn't help much to quench them. Resentment is a black hole consuming all light around it. But this sermon is not about resentment or forgiveness, even though the topics orbit the sermon title in the sermon topic, which is grace. And when I take a deep dive into the word of grace, I must consider a curse word, sin. But don't worry, we'll come back around to grace. Sin is a curse word. At least it's a curse word in UU circles, because how can one speak of sin at a UU church? How can we speak of sin in universalism? The word itself has been used to manipulate too many people, which would also make me want to let it die. However, in our culture, the death of sin is a life we may never know in our time. So instead, I choose to take the word back, like I have done with many of the theological terms programmed into me through my Orthodox childhood. The problem is we misuse the word. And I don't want to linger too much on curse words. You know me. But there is something very important one must glean from the current our current conversation from this concept. The word sin, as we know it and understand it, comes from an Old English, then Latin term meaning guilt. Whereas the Greek and Hebrew words used in the Bible are more similar to archery terms, like the Greek term hamartia, or the Hebrew term chata, which have to do with an archer just missing the mark of the target. The difference is dramatic. Culture loves to simplify our misdeeds and make them all the same. Murder, then, is on the same level as petty theft. Petty theft is on the same level as making an honest mistake, whereas my parents would have said, I should have known better. Culture would make sin a legal term limited to guilt, often misinterpreting the passage, the wages of sin is death, to mean the wages of sin is eternal punishment or damnation. There is a difference. I could say the wages of resentment is death. The wages of hatred is death. The wages of what other bad thing that we think of is death. Interpreting it that same way, I interpret the six Buddhist realms in karma, in that when we are resentful and hateful, we create a resentful and hateful space around us. And that space is folded back onto ourselves, and we see a resentful and hateful world that would devour us. And Orthodox Christianity would force me to forego talking about the needs to sin. For in our failures, we learn to become better. We are in a process. We are becoming. We are not what we will be when we truly orient ourselves to love, hope, and grace. I told you I'd come back to it. Practically, this means something very counterintuitive. To evolve into a better community, church, and family, we must fail. We must fail over and over again. And if we define every transgression as sin, we must sin. We must fail in our relationships. We must misspeak. And that means, sadly, we will hurt one another, not out of malice, but out of our humanity and our search for divinity. And this is a very precarious area because we want everyone who walks through these doors to feel welcome and safe. It is a dichotomy that is very dangerous. It means that we must guard our words, living in empathy for the experience that we cannot understand. We will hurt others and others will hurt us. And it's not okay. But it is life. And we have to learn to have relationships with imperfect people as we are imperfect people ourselves. Theologically, love provides an orientation, and grace is one of the many tools in our toolbox to get there. And now this topic has become very broad and can go so many different ways. And if I were to try and talk about the fullness of grace in 20 minutes, I would do more harm than good. Because grace with people to whom we are in relationship is different than grace with people who do not seek relationship with us. Even more so, grace is different with people who have committed heinous crime against innocence and people who have used power selfishly and left a destructive trail that can never be fixed. And though we must all use grace, we must also make safe space for ourselves and our loved ones. Grace does not give permission to harm and cannot become a loophole for those that would misuse power. However, we can never grow in the shadow of resentment. And the only way to let go of resentment is through forgiveness and grace in the knowledge that we too are imperfect. So you will hear more from me in the coming weeks on grace. Grace with others and grace with ourselves. However, today I want you to understand something very significant. We can't grow without safety to fail. And safety requires the people around us who love us to know if we go deeper together, you will see me at my worst. And when you see me at my worst, I need your grace. And when I see you thusly so, I ought give it the same. During the lowest times in my life, some people met me with derision in my failures, in my sin, and in my broken spirit, while others met me with grace. I could say very clearly and directly that during those times, grace walked into my life to tell me everything was going to be okay, to remind me that I deserve love too. And then the words come alive. Trusting only in thy merit, would I seek thy face. Heal my wounded, broken spirit. Save me by thy grace. And I'm crying, Savior, oh Savior. I want you just to hear my humble cry. While on others thou art calling, do not pass me by. Thank you.